I want to ask you a question, Drew, because you have your level two.
I think it's expired, but
That's fine.
still on my resume.
Yeah, you've been trained by the cult, so you should have the answer to this question.
Certified.
CrossFit loves the phrase constantly varied high intensity
Oh,
functional movement.
Jesus Christ.
What is a functional movement according to CrossFit?
Oh, man. You're saying that there's a real answer that I should know the answer to it?
I mean, one would think that since it is a core part of their entire philosophy on training, that they would have a definition for the term.
Assuming we're not doing an intro.
Should we, I mean, I got to banter about something, right? That's what the people want.
See, I talked about people backing into parking spots.
Yeah, they're already mad about that. That episode will have published by now. It hasn't published yet, so I haven't heard all that angry feedback yet.
Here, actually, okay, there you go. Boom. So I know that my little New Year's trick about deleting photos on your iPhone was a hot take. All of you guys out there cleaning up space on your phones, well done. Good for you. Here's step two in the journey. Put your phone on grayscale. So I'm like intentionally trying to cut down on screen time and just mindlessly looking at my phone. So
Between the two of us, I guarantee my screen time is drastically worse than yours, even before you started fixing it.
1,000%. But I'm taking steps to course correct. You are getting worse. Deleted Instagram, deleted YouTube. Those are my two culprits, contenders for most screen time. Anyway, deleted those. They're not there. I know people sorely miss all of my sourdough posts. They'll be back, but I also put my phone in black and white. So, or grayscale. Sorry, not black and white, grayscale. So you guys can do that in your settings
Is there a
or.
difference? Is there a difference between black and white and grayscale?
Probably my thought would be that black and white, well, grayscale, it's like the same palette, but everything is just grayed out accordingly. And I think black and
As
white,
in
maybe.
only using black or white?
Yeah, but
Could...
I think there's like an official difference between the two. I think black and
Okay.
white.
Is starker, like more contrast if it's black and white?
Probably.
Not as shaded?
Black and white has only two colors. Black and white. That makes sense. Grayscale contains shades of gray and is used for reproducing images.
Okay, feels the same to me because like black and white movies have shades of gray in them. They do.
But I think that's a misnomer though, before or not before. I think that's a misnomer because black and white movies are actually grayscale. They're not just black and white because there's shades. I think with black and white, there's no shades. It's just black and white.
Okay. But can't you recreate shades by having like pixels of black mixed with
Think
pixels
of it
of
this
white?
way. What's that yin yang thing? Is it just called a
Yeah.
yin yang?
Yeah.
Yeah, that little symbol. That's black and white. If you were to shade that with a pencil to create some depth, now it's grayscale.
Okay.
That might be totally wrong.
I will, since you're talking about iPhones and devices and things like that and screen time, I'm gonna share some of my decision-making struggles with the audience here and see what their thoughts are.
Oh, yeah, Alex is coming to Team iPhone.
Thinking about it. Considering a switch, now that I'm a content creator and an influencer and things like that,
Oh, God.
it seems appropriate to switch to the platform that's more designed for that kind of work. So I am considering Mac and or iPhone life. If anybody out there has made the switch
You have to do both.
before,
You can't do one or the other. You have to
I
do
know
both.
they go together in
We
the
call it the
ecosystem.
ecosystem. Yeah,
I
welcome to
know.
the ecosystem.
But if anybody out there has thoughts, if anybody's gone from iOS to Android or Android to iOS and has thoughts about the transition, let me know. And then the other one, and this is more just me sharing my mental health struggles with my audience, but I'm on my phone way too much, if you haven't noticed.
That is
In
true. I just
particular,
Alex just stayed here for the weekend and he was on his phone a lot.
my biggest problem, once upon a time, I was like, hey, listen, I got to stop answering all the DMs on the Mops and Mo's page. So I like tried to stop for a while and then I went right back to it. I
Loves
have
it.
received multiple messages from people. Even within the last couple of weeks, I've received a few messages from people sharing their appreciation that I am responsive on the page. Sometimes I'm more responsive, sometimes I'm less responsive. Like sometimes I'll be behind a day or two in the messages. Sometimes I'm like responding to them pretty fast. But that is largely a symptom of some kind of mental health disorder. I don't know what it is, but I really need to stop. It's not good for me. There's way too many. Every morning I wake up and there's like 20 or 30 messages. Sometimes there's too many messages and it stresses me out, so I don't look at them for a couple of days. And by the time I do look at them, there's like 100, and it's not good. It's not healthy.
There's something there about, what is it? Like the endorphin rush or something of,
yeah, it's really bad.
Isn't it like clicking Instagram is the same as doing cocaine or something?
Probably. In which case I do a lot of cocaine.
But just wrapping this up really quickly before we talk about what we're here to talk about. I'd be curious everyone's thoughts on this, because I'm of the opinion that if you have an Android and you text me and your thing shows up green, that you're poor. So if you like, and that this is before my phone was in grayscale, obviously now I can't tell the difference, because everything's gray, but
just colorblind now. He doesn't colorblind. See color.
Yeah. I don't see class and color. I don't iPhone, Android. I don't know these things, but prior to that, yeah, if you showed up green, you're poor. So, I'm joking when I say that, obviously, sort of, but yeah, I think you should get an iPhone and, maybe, you know, spend less time on Instagram. But, what are we here to talk about today? You only have the two of us today, team. You only have Drew and Alex, and we're going to talk about...
It's just us, and we're here to talk about mostly drama from the Instagram DMs. And by that, I mean many people have asked for this, and I haven't shared it super publicly. They want to know our thoughts on CrossFit.
Capital C, capital F?
It is also a capital F. Cross, no space, fit, capital C, capital F. Restricted trademark logo, probably.
Mm-hmm.
I will preface this with a few kind of disclaimers before we dig into it. This is a critique of sorts, which means we will probably end up focusing a little imbalanced towards the things we have issues with CrossFit. But I think on the whole, both Drew and I are relatively supportive of CrossFit and what it's done for the industry. But just the nature of critiques and working through some of CrossFit's published guidelines, doctrine, whatever you want to call it. We will probably find specifically the things we kind of disagree with and focus on those more, but that doesn't mean we're totally against it. I think they're doing some good things. And then another couple of quick disclaimers. People have different ideas in their heads of what CrossFit is. There's the theoretical version of CrossFit. There's the CrossFit that is practiced in gyms, which varies widely between different gyms. And then there's CrossFit as understood by outside observers, which I don't think is usually a very fair representation of what happens in there. And unfortunately, I think a lot of military units end up either thinking with or using the third option, that outside observer version of CrossFit, untrained, not necessarily very knowledgeable on it. And there are predictable consequences for that. And I also think that the CrossFit games are not necessarily a fair representation of what happens in CrossFit gyms. And a lot of people, that's all they see. So they assume that's what it's like all the time. So I don't think that's necessarily a super fair representation of it.
I think what it's going to boil down to and where this conversation will go is what I like to call capital C CrossFit versus CrossFit, which would be lowercase. Just
depending on how nerdy you want to get, you might call it multimodal training or...
Well, you say that, but I remember, and I'll use this as my lead in for kind of my background in CrossFit. But I do remember in the early days, when CrossFit was becoming more and more popular, and you started to see a lot of, Globo commercial type gyms creating CrossFit classes. I do remember, because of the trademark issues, you would start to see a lot of creative names for what X-Fit. Was ultimately CrossFit. Yeah, like X-Fit or like Functional Fit or Cross X. Like I think X-Fit was, because the gym I'm thinking about is actually one that I went to in Denmark, in Copenhagen, and I think X-Fit was the word that they used, because again, you couldn't call it CrossFit. Also, interesting fact about Denmark, they can randomly drug test you as like a civilian in a normal gym if they think that mm-hmm. you're on performance enhancing drugs. So shout out Denmark for keeping everyone small. So yeah, CrossFit background. I think it's important before we tee this off, just to, you know, waylay all the haters out there who are going to tell us that we're talking out of our ass. So I, in my career, I'm fairly confident it's expired. But I did go all the way up to the level two. So I got my level one, had that for a long time, and then did my level two. When I was growing up in the fitness world, I was doing a program called Seal Fit, SEAL, because that's back when everybody who was of our generation thought that they were going to be a Navy SEAL. Mark Devine, shout out Mark Devine for that program. That was, I think, sort of an offshoot of CrossFit that included box breathing and carrying rocks around. So just think of CrossFit plus breathing and rocks, because that's what got you through BUDS at the time, apparently. So I did that one. Jim Jones was pretty popular at the time too, if folks are familiar. Jim Jones, kind of the cultish little gym that became popular when the movie 300 came out, because they trained with Mark Twite, who was the owner of Jim Jones. So I was doing all that kind of madness, and then got my level one. I do remember at my level one, this was many years ago, they were still doing Fran. And this was before they realized that putting random people onto pull-up bars and trying to have them kip, and then they would, I think the risk was that they were like launching themselves off of pull-up bars and getting injured. So they ended up taking Fran out of the level one curriculum. But
Don't worry, we will talk about kipping later.
we will talk about kipping. So level one worked. I mean, geez, I couldn't even give you the number of CrossFit gyms that I've worked at. CrossFit gyms I've helped start, CrossFit gyms I've programmed for. Got my level two in Arizona a couple of years ago. And so, yeah, I'll press pause there. But just as far as my own thoughts and things are concerned with CrossFit, I do think that there is a net positive, but there's also a lot of traps in there that could cause some problems, especially when we think about the tactical space. So what's your background with CrossFit, Alex?
I am not a level two, nor am I a level one either. The extent of
We
my
call you
form.
muggles. We call you people muggles who have never. You probably have an Android too, don't you?
You already know that. The extent of my CrossFit experience, if you want to call it that, I did go through, again, onboarding as a lieutenant that was actually surprisingly useful for introducing me to some things I wasn't including in my gym routine at the time.
Thrusters.
I've actually recommended that to a few people because, and this is not like selling a hack or something like that, but a lot of CrossFit gyms let you do like a free trial at the beginning and you can go through their onboarding course. And even if you're not planning to get into CrossFit, that's a great way to expose yourself to some different training modalities. Learn a few things. If you're not like a barbell person, you'll get a little bit of comfort on the barbell. Since then, I have not been a member of a gym. So that was like 2013 timeframe. But I have participated in organized events at CrossFit gyms. I've done a few things. I'm close with a lot of people at gyms. But no, I'm not a certified CrossFit instructor of any kind. And actually, I should clarify, level ones and level twos are not certified either. Level ones and level twos are certificates, and they make that very clear in their program that you're not certified until you're level three. You gotta go read the book. Drew's looking at me funny because he thought he was certified because he
Well,
was a level.
certified comes from
don't worry about it, man. Don't think about it
certified
too
and
hard.
certificate
It's two whole pages of the
come
handbook.
from
They make it very clear.
same
I know
word.
it's the same root word. Do not worry about it. The core difference in their logic is that a certificate indicates that you came to them and got training, and that is what happened. A certification is you came to them and they evaluated what you already know. So you had to go learn on your own. You had to come with a bunch of knowledge. So level one and level two, you come as you are and they impart knowledge on you and you leave with a certificate that they gave you knowledge. Level three and level four, you come and they test that you have met the standards already.
It sounds like board certified, but without the board.
Don't worry about it. It's in the handbook.
Well, so
We're gonna go through a lot of handbook content in this episode.
that's
I
totally
would
fair.
assume that you, as a certificate holder but not a certified trainer,
I don't
would have
remember
read the
any of it.
handbook.
Nope. I did at the time. No, I did. And I say that because when I got my level one, that's all that there was. And so when I got my
Fair.
level two, that's also all that there was. So I went through this interesting CrossFit trajectory evolution thing where, like, I got the thing and then did it. And then, oh God, now there's another thing I have to pay for. So then I got that thing. And then they just kept adding things. And I was like, I'm done. This is stupid. So I'll have thoughts on the coaching side of this probably later on, but I'll turn it over to you to talk through the handbook stuff.
Yeah, the handbook is kind of going to be the theme of the rest of this because I briefly looked at the level two handbook. I didn't really dig into it. That level two handbook seems like a lot more focused on practical coaching. The level one handbook contained a ton of like the philosophy of CrossFit and like their beliefs on a bunch of things.
Their Bible.
And after actually hanging out with Drew for a couple of days in North Carolina, I hopped on a plane to come home.
Spent most of the time on his phone, screen
And
time.
well, first off, I spent more time editing a podcast episode than I did on my
No, that's
phone.
true.
You're
That's
welcome for
true.
doing all the editing.
Thank you. No, thank you. Carry on.
You're welcome. But hopped on a plane to come home. Usually when I'm on flights, I'm editing podcast episodes, but on this particular flight, like a psychopath, I downloaded the CrossFit Level One Handbook and just read the whole thing.
Which is funny because you were flying home to Colorado, and as I'm sitting here thinking about it, if all of the states were gyms, Colorado would be a CrossFit gym
That's probably true.
with a climbing wall in the back.
Absolutely.
So that's just a thought. I don't, North Carolina might just be like a Lifetime Fitness or something. But anyway,
The climbing gym I go to used to have a CrossFit gym in it
there you
before
go.
the gym got too big and
See,
moved out.
in Colorado.
And then before we run into it, I do want to say I think the standout thing for me for CrossFit of like the value they have added or what they're doing better than a lot of other programs is building communities of people that care about health and fitness. And I guess in addition to building those communities, those people are also developing habits that match those values. I don't necessarily agree with every detail of the whole thing, and there are some traps, like Drew mentioned, but I think on the community building side, and people will have heard me talk about affective domain learning and things like that, teaching people to care. I think that's where CrossFit, to a certain degree, stands apart.
It's a gateway drug, I have kind of always thought. And I was thinking about this before we were recording and just kind of because one of my the first CrossFit gym I worked at, no, that's not true. One of the first CrossFit gyms that I worked at, I actually helped co-found, and it was in the corner of a YMCA. And so I think this probably is a check in the box for the positive side of CrossFit, for me at least, because when I think about the YMCA, and this is a YMCA that I had gone to my entire life, and it was where I first started working out in high school and all these things. And as is the way with these Globo gyms, you often will have the guys doing the weightlifting and the grunting and all that kind of stuff, and then the women doing the cardio or the classes. And in all my time going there, the CrossFit program was the only one that seemed to appeal equally to guys who wanted to get big and strong and girls that wanted to just kind of get fit. And I think that if you think about the fitness industry as a whole, and we might get into this a little bit later, but to my knowledge, or at least in my memory, CrossFit is one of the only disciplines or one of the earliest disciplines that bridged the gap across so many different fitness domains. So no longer were gym goers in different silos based on what they wanted to do. So like, oh, I only go to the gym to lift, or I only go to the gym to run, or I only go to the gym for Pilates or Zumba. CrossFit kind of smushed all that together and was like, hey, we're here to get you fit, healthy, have a good time, build community. And oh, by the way, we're gonna try and force all this cult stuff down your throat too. So with that, I'll turn it back to you with the handbook.
Now, speaking of cult stuff, I think this is an important.
Is CrossFit a cult?
So I would say some outsiders of CrossFit think it's a cult. Some insiders of CrossFit also describe it as a cult. The gym I have been kind of visiting here is pretty, I wouldn't say they're pretty cultish, but they definitely all spend all their time together outside of the gym too, which is cult-like behavior.
Or church-like behavior.
I do think that reading the whole handbook cover to cover made me think it was more of a cult than I thought before I read it.
Because you read the manual.
And that is in large part because essentially the entire manual is just written by Greg Glassman. And almost every page of the manual has a pullout block quote quoting Greg Glassman. Doesn't quote anybody else. Even though it's all written by Greg,
Not a good look.
there's block quotes on the sides, and under each quote it says Greg Glassman. Now, we're probably not going to dive too far into the history of CrossFit on this episode. We don't have time for that with all the stuff we're going to talk about. I know right before we started, Drew pulled up an article about the history of CrossFit. So maybe we'll throw it in the show notes or something. But CrossFit was very much Greg's thing. I don't honestly know as much as I should about Greg's background. I think he was a
Some
gymnast who got injured.
gymnastics coach.
Yeah, which explains a little bit of probably overemphasis on certain gymnastic skills, but that's a separate conversation that we'll probably get to later in the episode. I don't know what his nutrition qualifications are. He has a lot of
None.
opinions on nutrition, but I don't think he has any qualifications on it.
He has certifications. He's not
Oh yeah.
certified.
He's not certified. He just has certificates. Yeah.
I love that.
But yeah, the manual has some interesting stuff in it, but it's pretty cultish.
Yeah, I'm gonna cut you off and I'm gonna say CrossFit is a cult. Arguably in a good way, but I'm thinking back to early days CrossFit, and we won't go into the history per se, but just for folks that genuinely have no clue, it was founded by Greg Glassman, who, as you mentioned, was a gymnastics coach in Santa Cruz around 2000, give or take a year or two. So that was the first gym, was in Santa Cruz. And then they effectively franchised it, but not really. And it spread, and the rest is history. I do. So it's interesting because if you go back to the early days of CrossFit, and if anybody wants to have a good read, I would look up the Black Box Summit. That was where CrossFit took a testy turn, if you
There
will,
was some
because
drama associated with the
drama.
summit. Yeah.
And I don't remember all the details, but effectively early days CrossFit, and this is when I was doing it and loved it and thought it was great. They actually were bringing in experts from other fields. So this is, we mentioned in the book episode, Mark Rippetoe. Like Mark Rippetoe was like their weightlifting, or I guess not their weightlifting, he was kind of their barbell guy. I think like Rob Orlando was like the strongman guy. Kelly Starrett was sort of the mobility guy. So you saw an interesting blend of different styles. And then at the center of that was this guy, Greg Glassman. I mean, I'm thinking of like the original fire breathers, like Greg Amundsen was one of those dudes. Yeah, OPEX.
Yeah, Fitzgerald.
James Fitzgerald. Yeah. So like you saw this kind of DIY mixing and mashing of all these different components to create CrossFit. And then where it became interesting was that a lot of those guys who were at one point welcomed started to get pushed out because it became capital C, capital F CrossFit, which sort of claimed to be the end all be all for fitness. It defined fitness, it defined functional, it started to, for lack of a better term, worship its own definitions of those things and basically say and declare that we are correct and this is it. And if you cross us in that, we will destroy you. There have been instances of CrossFit folks sitting in like congressional hearings and like high level stuff when it comes to, and some of it I think was for the good. I'm thinking of kind of the war that they raged on sugary drinks and Coca-Cola and that kind of thing. Like, well done.
But they also waged a war on like being hydrated.
Yeah.
So
So some of it, again, back to, yeah, I think, is it a cult? That was the original question. Yes, I think it is. I think, and I say that slightly tongue in cheek. And I
and there's
say that,
value to being a cult. Cult members are committed.
right.
So
I think where it becomes cult-ish is when CrossFit becomes your answer to every question that you're asked, whether that's as a coach, as an athlete. And it does create some interesting follow-on conversations that we might get into, which is that when you look at who we think of as the embodiment of CrossFit, which would be kind of the CrossFit Games athletes, you can start to question whether or not they're actually doing CrossFit to train for that. Are they doing other things? What does it truly mean to be a champion of CrossFit? So a lot of layers. We'll probably unpack some of them, but yeah, we'll just trigger people right off the bat. Say CrossFit's cult.
no, I think that brings me to one of my key observations as I read through the handbook is that the style of it threw me off a little bit. Parts of it were like kind of pretending to be science, but large portions of it are much more like a sales pitch. There's a number of pretty ridiculous claims. We'll talk about a few of them. There's a very frequent trend of like sketchy science with no citations. Like he'll say many studies have found or studies have shown, studies have proven, whatever, without citing a single study. And some of the stuff is like objectively false. And then, as you mentioned, repeatedly making the claim that CrossFit is inherently superior to every alternative. So like that it tries to be a textbook sometimes. It talks about statistical models, but then it never explains what those statistical models are. talks about quantifying everything, but really all that means is timing your workouts. I don't know. It's strange in the way it's delivered.
I mean, I guess in their defense, what you just described could also be applied to most of the products that are sold in the fitness industry.
That's completely true. Yeah. I won't deny that at
So,
all.
I mean, there's a lot of coaches out there, and you've gotten into Instagram fights with some of them saying, many studies this, many studies that, bippity bop. It's like, okay, you're full of shit.
If anybody wants to have a lot of fun on Instagram, and by fun I mean get in fights because it's one of my hobbies. There's tons of like really big fitness influencers out there. Some of them who are pretty smart, some of them have PhDs and doctor in their handle and stuff like that. And they'll make these really bold claims because they know that nobody's going to read the study that they cite if they even cite anything. So it's really fun to ask them for citations and then actually read the studies they send you because they usually don't back up the stuff they're saying, and it's a super fun game.
Well, then what's more interesting to me is that we've had this discussion before. I won't belabor the point, but we talk, many studies sort of thing. It's like, well, most studies in this industry suck anyway. So even if you were to cite studies, the likelihood of those studies being legit is relatively low. So anyway,
That's fair.
beating a dead horse.
I'm gonna skip over some of the other philosophical stuff I thought we might talk about, and I want to dive into like specific claims CrossFit makes or specific ways CrossFit coaches. And I do want to start with one that we already kind of mentioned. It's one that gets everybody real worked up. I'm gonna read the quote from the handbook before we talk about it. The quote is, "The kipping pull-up is CrossFit's default pull-up. It allows the athlete to accomplish more work in less time, parentheses, higher power, due to the hips assisting the upper body pull. CrossFit recommends athletes develop a strict pull-up before performing kipping pull-ups to develop a baseline of shoulder stability and strength." I bring this up because kipping is something that is often made fun of on social media when CrossFit talks about stuff. People cite it as like unnecessarily injurious, whatever, whatever. I would start by saying kipping is not cheating. Kipping is just a different exercise with a different goal. CrossFit is all about power production, moving mass over distances in a confined amount of time, and you can definitely produce more power doing a kipping pull-up than you can doing a regular pull-up. It's just a different thing. So it's not a competition between a regular pull-up and a kipping pull-up. It's just which exercise are you choosing based on the goal you are trying to achieve. And if CrossFit's fundamental thing with all their workouts is producing the maximum amount of power, the kipping pull-up would be the appropriate one for that. That said, I don't think they follow their own guidance on making sure people achieve good strict pull-ups before they get into kipping pull-ups. And it comes with lots of fun videos of people kipping themselves off the bar and flying across the room and hitting the floor.
Yeah, and I think for the longest time, and maybe it's still going on, I just haven't paid attention, but I think as CrossFit was gaining steam and becoming more and more popular and quite honestly stealing market value from other people trying to make money in this space, you oftentimes would see videos of kipping pull-ups or butterfly pull-ups used as like knocks on the sport. Like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, this is what you're teaching, blah, blah, blah. And for people that don't know, a kipping pull-up is like when people flop around to get their chin over the bar, and like a butterfly pull-up is when you're kind of like flopping with a little bit more grace, I suppose. I
As
don't know.
a CrossFit level two guy, you're being a little
Yeah.
disrespectful to
So
kipping,
the
which is an
way.
actual gymnastics thing.
No, you're right. You're
And
right. You're
it's more
right.
specifically moving through like universal extension to universal flexion, and like hollow rocks and things like that are a part of the whole thing.
You sound
It is
certified.
part of gymnastics. Like
No, it
it's a
is. It
real
is.
thing.
But here's my take on this,
It's not
because
just flopping around.
it depends on who you look at. But I kind of went back and forth on this because for a long time I was in the strict pull-up camp, and that's all you should do. And then I understood the kipping and the butterfly. And effectively, what it boils down to for me is this: kipping and butterfly pull-ups are they exist for like the purposes of the sport of CrossFit, where you're doing something for time. And if you're doing something for time, and I can flop my way to 20 pull-ups faster than you constrict your way to 20 pull-ups, then I'm going to win. And it's the same as looking at speed walking in the Olympics and being like, that's not how you walk. And it's like, well, of course that's not how you walk, but it's speed walking. It's not walking. So there was a lot of knocks against butterfly pull-ups and kipping pull-ups, but just kind of understand that they're not doing pull-ups. They're racing, they're exercising for time. And when you're exercising for time, you're going to look for shortcuts to do more reps in less time. So again, I have done butterfly pull-ups before, kipping pull-ups, all the things. It's just interesting that that became that movement of all those movements, for some reason, that movement became the knock against the sport of CrossFit for so long.
I'm digging through here because I do want to find a quote from Greg that's in the handbook about kind of the nature of exercising for time. And before I find that quote, I'll mention that I don't think people like think through some of the consequences, like why are the movement standards what they are? Because they'll criticize the movement standards in competition, things like that. Like you would want to see a higher quality of movement if movement was, if like movement quality was your top priority. And at the end of the day, movement quality simply isn't their top
it's
priority.
Not the priority. It's not
and
the
when you're when you're going to do competitive exercise, and they do believe in the power of competition to motivate people to higher intensities, and that is a real thing. I think everybody here has experienced the difference between when you train on your own and when you train with people that are kind of pushing you a little bit. Part of that is you have to establish enforceable standards rather than optimal standards, things that can be easily observed by somebody who says, yes, that was a good rep, no, that was not a good rep. And that's a little bit different than movement quality, which is not quite as discrete of like, yes, that's good, no, that's bad. And that's just part of the sacrifice you have to make if competition is at the core of what you're trying to do. So that brings me to this quote. I'm skipping ahead on some of the notes we have here, but this is straight out of the handbook. Athletes and their trainers should focus on movement proficiency before adding speed and load. That is in the handbook. Now, they are massively hypocritical about that because
I was going to say
that's relatively early in it. I think here it says mechanics, consistency, then and only then intensity. That's page 77, but pages 43 through 44 are all about how you should push the speed until mistakes start happening. Like they intentionally say you should push the speed until you're screwing up a little bit,
which is dumb. Don't do that.
I'm skipping to page 82 now. I know I'm pulling stuff from all over this handbook, but straight from Greg, in a CrossFit workout, if you are moving well, I will tell you to pick up the speed. Suppose at the higher speed, the movement still looks good. I will encourage you to go faster still. And if it still looks good, I will encourage you to go even faster. Now the movement starts falling apart. I do not want you to slow down yet. First, at that speed, I want you to fix your technique. What you need to do is continuously and constantly advance the margins at which form falters. Now, Greg would say that I'm pretending that there is a paradox here when there actually is none. I would say Greg is being a guru and not in a good way.
I would say Greg needs to focus on somebody else in the class because you're spending way too much time watching me get faster and faster.
It is. I mean, he talks about like,
shut up, Greg,
NASCAR. Like, you're never going to be a good NASCAR driver unless you crash a few cars trying to go faster than you should. It's some pretty wild stuff. I don't know what the right answer is.
Greg lives his life a quarter mile at a time. I think we can say.
I
think
believe
we can
that.
Say that.
I believe that.
And I think this to me is kind of where we reach a fork in the road with CrossFit, because there's a kind of fictional version of it, or an idealized version of it, which is what I hear when I hear you reading those words from the good Lord Greg. Just this idea of like, oh, movement is beautiful and it should happen quickly and we should find fault and all these things, and intensity comes after proficiency and all this. But that's great, except that the business model CrossFit runs does not allow for any sort of quality control. So what I mean by that is that, and I don't know what the price point is nowadays, but back in the day, you would get your level one and then you would pay CrossFit whatever it was, $2,000 a year, and you owned a CrossFit gym and you could do whatever you wanted in that gym, and it was called CrossFit. And I don't remember his exact quote or CrossFit's exact quote, but like, they literally did not care if 10 people opened 10 gyms on the same street and called them CrossFit.
They have specifically said they like that competition.
They like that. And their whole philosophy is like, oh, well, the best one will win. And it's like,
normally in the franchising world, when you franchise a business, there's an agreement signed that they will not allow another franchise within a certain number of miles of you based on the population density, whatever, whatever. CrossFit does not make any such guarantees to any affiliates.
Exactly. And while in theory, sure, the cream will rise to the top, what that ultimately means is we've hurt a shit ton of people, so much so that this is the only gym now on the street. And that's where I have an issue with CrossFit, which is that all the things he just said there are great, But the further away you get from headquarters and the further you get into what most people think of as CrossFit, which is the gym down the street that the dude in spandex runs with a bunch of tribal tattoos on his arms, they're probably just throwing people into a class at high intensity and not really teaching the movements. And if they are, it involves a PVC pipe and a medicine ball clean. And hey, good for you. You did our 2-week on-ramp. Now get in the class. We're doing Fran for time. Like, that to me is where it goes south and where people, I think, have a knock against CrossFit that I think is justified, which is that there is no quality control in this brand. I think maybe that's starting to change a little bit. They've certainly hired and fired a ton of people recently, so I don't really know what the latest is in terms of their sort of overall corporate policy. But man, I remember years back, CrossFit was like the elephant graveyard of just, oh man, I used to do CrossFit and then I screwed up my back or I screwed up my shoulder or I got a slap tear from doing.
Wasn't like Uncle Rabdo a character? Or
yeah, Rabdo the clown, man.
Rabdo the clown.
Yeah, this was years ago. You would be encouraged to paint a picture. No, Uncle Rabdo, Pukey the clown.
That's what it is. There we go.
Pukey the clown. So you would paint you'd have this old sticker of a clown puking, and that was like the cool thing. And then Uncle Rabdo was like the other cool thing. Rabdo is short for rhabdomyolysis. It's when your muscles break down and you start to get basically like muscle fibers in your bloodstream and you can die. But
I will throw out a couple things here. One, just based on some other work I've been doing and things I've been looking at, military members experience rhabdo at a rate of roughly 20 times the civilian population. So introducing more things that carry rhabdo risk might not be the
best
move.
Is that because they have to work out and the general population doesn't?
I mean, it's because they have to work out and the general population doesn't. It's because a lot of things in the military are like high volume, repetitive stuff. A lot of it's just exposure to heat and then having to do manual labor in that heat. There's a lot of reasons it happens.
Sure.
A lot of those rhabdo cases occur in initial entry training where you're taking deconditioned people and trying to ramp them up. Whatever. But I would encourage people, there's good documents out there about like principles of safe training to avoid rhabdo. Maybe I'll throw some of that in the show notes here, but
that's a whole different episode.
Yeah. We don't have time for that right now. It's like you said, a whole different conversation.
Back
but
to the handle.
I will also share. So if you want to go read the level one handbook, you want to dive into some of this stuff, almost everything we're going to talk about in this episode is between pages 1 and 82. That's where like the principles are. After that, it gets into more like drills and exercises and random stuff like that. With a few exceptions, the pull-up quote I pulled is definitely after page 82. The whole rant about the difference between certifications and certificates is after page 82. And the next thing I'm about to say is also after page 82, but it goes back to exactly what Drew was talking about. Again, I will quote from the handbook. We have seen this skill, referring to coaching, fully and adequately developed by only one path, gradually migrating from one-on-one to group sessions. The trainers who are running group classes without growing into them are typically not working to the professional training standards we have described. That's from an article in the handbook of how to develop yourself as a coach. And it seems deeply hypocritical. There's probably a lesson in here for developing military fitness instructors, because military never does like one-on-one stuff. It only does group coaching. But it's, the real issue is that CrossFit says this, but there are no prerequisites whatsoever to get your level one. And level one is the only requirement to start coaching and to even open your own gym. And so they're kind of specifically taking people with no coaching background at all and then throwing them into running group classes, despite saying that they don't think that's a good way to develop as a coach.
Here's a hot take. CrossFit develops coaches better than the NCAA.
See, there's a good conversation
I think it is one of the
only certifications
I think
in
that's
the game
true.
Where hands-on coaching stuff happens as part of the process of developing a coach.
I mean, you could knock CrossFit, and I'm thinking of the level one, because the knock against the level one is it's only a weekend. You could knock them for that, and I think that there's some fairness to it. But the NSCA, the CSCS, the industry-leading certification for strength and conditioning, is less than a weekend. It's an online test. So does that make you a coach? Absolutely not. It means you're a good test taker. You could have never...
And most of the knowledge tested is not relevant to coaching.
No. You could have never...
I think most people with a CSCS would admit that.
Right. And so I think that's always been an interesting one for me, because I got my level one and my CSCS, if I remember correctly, around the same time. And I, to this day, think that getting a level one and coaching CrossFit classes is the best education for your standard gen pop coach, which you could argue is your embedded military human performance coach. You know, the collegiate space is great. Professional athletics is great. It teaches you to think a certain way, though, about strength and conditioning. If you get thrown into a CrossFit gym as a coach and you have to coach 4 or 5 classes a day of 15 to 20 people, you will see more movement varieties. You will see more scaling options. You will see more different types of people than you will ever see working for University of Alabama's football team. So does that make you a better coach because you have, you know, whatever, the crimson elephant on your chest at Alabama? I don't think so. I think the other thing that's interesting about CrossFit, and I mentioned the gateway drug earlier, for myself as a CrossFit coach, because that was kind of my first paid gig in this world, was coaching CrossFit classes. I had to be proficient at Olympic lifting. I had to be proficient at kettlebells. I had to be proficient at gymnastics. I had to know enough about eating and nutrition to talk that talk because CrossFit loves to throw nutrition into their stuff.
Zone diet.
Yeah, I had to understand powerlifting. I had to understand general barbell training. I had to understand body. So, like,
There is some like lunatic off the rails nutrition stuff in the handbook, by the way.
asinine, asinine. And we
We'll
can
get to
get to
one. We'll
that.
get to one of them. I pulled out the quote because it is insane,
We can
but.
get to that. But I think I will die on this hill. CrossFit makes you a better coach than the NCAA.
Boom. There it is.
And I would love, I say that intentionally to like inspire conversation and dialogue and to have people tell me I'm wrong. And that's not to say that the NCAA is all bad, but the other thing that's interesting about that, just as a quick tangent, and I mean, I think people know by this point, I did my graduate work overseas and the United Kingdom Strength and Conditioning Association, the UKSCA, they take a lot of their stuff from the NCAA with one major difference, which is that to become UKSCA certified, there is like a hands-on practical, like you have to coach in front of people. You have it's, I mean, it's not a board certification, but it's a lot closer than a computer-based test that you can knock out in 3 hours. So it's a tangent, and we've had this conversation before. I just keep going back to this frustration of mine, which is that for this industry, the strength and conditioning industry, which keeps telling itself that it wishes people took it more seriously, it seems to bash organizations that put more time and effort into making coaches than the industry itself, from which we are bashing, if that made any sense. I
Yeah,
think that made
I
sense.
think a theme of this episode is that we're going to acknowledge that CrossFit has had a generally positive impact on
Oh, I think
this
it's had a
world.
hugely positive impact. Anyway, we'll
Yeah.
get to that.
We'll keep going on that one. I'm still like scrolled down to the bottom of the notes page, and there's only two other exceptions to my after page 82 thing. And I want to knock out one of them because I think it's not a deep rabbit hole. It's
What
real
is on
fast.
page 82? What happens? Is
It's
there like,
just the end of where they talk about principles. That's all. We're
oh,
focused on
okay.
principles here.
Enter into the vortex.
No, but I just want to share this one. It's fascinating. People have opinions on this. This is a direct quote. We advise against rehydration strategies that encourage consumption of fluids to prevent loss of body weight during activity. That is like simply a direct statement that they advise against replacing lost body water.
Well, that's dumb.
And I'll throw it in the show notes. We don't have time for it this episode. There are a whole series of papers by CrossFit. I think it might be four separate papers. I remember reading them a long time ago. Titled The Hyponatremia of Exercise, meaning they think people are being encouraged to overhydrate to the point that is harming performance and or health. I'm not an expert on hyponatremia. I have actually had hyponatremia. I don't know much about mild hyponatremia that they're describing, where it's not clinical, but it might be affecting your health and performance. My experience with hyponatremia was I switched multivitamins right before a field training exercise, and I did not know that my new multivitamin was turning my urine very, very yellow. And as anybody who's been in the military knows, you got those little charts in the bathrooms that tell you how hydrated you are based on the color of your urine. I thought I was perpetually dehydrated, so I just kept drinking water over the course of this whole day. We were out in the field, but it wasn't super physical. We did like an air assault there and trucks back, so we weren't rucking very far. And I just kept drinking water. And I got back at the end of the exercise. I knew something was wrong. I'd been riding in a truck, but I had to stand. So I was like shaking around the whole time on the truck ride. And like the shaking was making my stomach very uncomfortable because it was full of water. Walked straight up to the medic, told him, hey man, something's wrong. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to go over there and throw up. Walked over to the trees, opened my mouth, and a hose just came out. Just water, nothing else. So he immediately recognized what was wrong. told me I needed to like eat
It's a
stuff
good medic.
containing electrolytes, salt, that kind of stuff.
I just give you an ibuprofen and a Z-Pack. Be like, here you
Yeah.
go. You're good.
So like hyponatremia does exist, but I don't think anybody gets hyponatremia from replacing the fluids they lose during exercise. I don't know. I don't
And
know if we want to go
it
down that rabbit
just,
hole, but
no, I mean, we don't have to, but to me, this is where we get into kind of some of the fringe cult-ish
they take
stuff.
strong stances on really
They take
random stuff.
exactly, they take strong stances on stuff. And the issue here is that, again, back to what I was mentioning earlier about quality control, you have created an environment where the coach, certified whatever the hell, where the coach becomes, for his or her community, they become kind of the expert. And this would be where I would find fault with such a short certification. You become the expert for so many people who are looking to you to give them advice on nutrition, give them advice on hydration and that kind of thing. And if you as the coach believe what you're being told, which is that, hey, after this weekend, you know everything there is to know, you won't pursue any additional research on your own to find the answers to those questions, to perhaps, go against what they're saying about hyponatremia and some of the things that we'll talk about with the nutrition piece. And that to me is, I know I just went on this whole rant about how CrossFit creates better coaches than the NSCA. I think that that is true, but I do think that there is some risk in, as a coach, not seeking out additional information. And I haven't looked at the CrossFit Journal in a long time, but I do remember that when my level one took place, the CrossFit Journal was kind of seen as the only place you ever really needed to go for continuing education. Like everything you would ever need to know is in this journal that gets published at whatever frequency it was at the time. So I think I was lucky given that it was the early days of CrossFit and they were still encouraging folks to look at starting strength and look at the different, disciplines of training. Whereas I think a little bit later on, they kind of brought all that in and said, you don't need to look anywhere outside of CrossFit to know and understand fitness. I'm rambling here, but that I think is an interesting kind of fringe point that they're making, which is like, hey, we know everything about hyponatremia. Listen to us, tell you what to do.
It's wild stuff. And they do like aggressively blame the army for like poor quality research on hydration that was done. It's an interesting series of articles. I'll leave it there. I'll put it in the show notes. I want to ask you a question, Drew, because you have your level two.
I think it's expired, but
That's fine.
still on my resume.
Yeah, you've been trained by the cult, so you should have the answer to this question.
Certified.
CrossFit loves the phrase constantly varied high intensity
Oh,
functional movement.
Jesus Christ.
What is a functional movement according to CrossFit?
Oh, man. You're saying that there's a real answer that I should know the answer to it?
I mean, one would think that since it is a core part of their entire philosophy on training, that they would have a definition for the term.
Yeah, because I have my own thoughts. I don't think that they're the same as CrossFit's.
But do you want to share yours, or do you want me to share CrossFit's?
I mean, mine is kind of a cynical take on functional. Like, oh, like bicep curls aren't functional. They
They
are.
are.
It's a
Objectively,
movement.
bicep
Like,
curls are
it's,
functional.
I don't know. I
Depending
think
on your definition of functional.
every movement is functional. Like, what move? A dysfunctional movement would be one that you either like can't do or hurts you. So, like me breaking my own arm is dysfunctional, but me bending my arm is completely functional. It's what the muscle and the ligaments are meant to do. Anyway, that part has always annoyed the shit out of me.
It's frustrating. Functional fitness is thrown around a lot. I think I've shared on the podcast before. I remember I briefly lived in Alexandria outside DC and joined a gym there, and they were giving me a tour of the facility, and the gym owner took me into a room and he said, "This is the functional fitness room. That just means there's turf on the floor." And I appreciated that. I appreciated the candor in the definition
Normally, functional fitness room means that the weight plates are rubber. Means they have
that they were
bumper
also
plates.
rubber in the
Oh
room.
yeah,
Yeah.
there
So
you go.
that's, yep. All the functional things were there. There was a
Most
turf
functional.
floor, pull-up bars mounted to the wall, bumper plates and kettlebells. I think they checked all the boxes. There might even have been jump ropes.
That is true.
Very,
Now that you
very
say
functional.
that, the gym, yeah, that is so true. There are like gyms like that's the functional fitness room. It's like, well, why? Because there's a rower
Yeah.
and a TRX.
Nobody knows what it means.
Oh, and also we have a tire.
I think at the end of the day, functional is more of a marketing advertising
For
term
sure.
than it is an
For
actual thing that
sure.
means anything in fitness.
You know whose fault that is? It's CrossFit. CrossFit made that up.
It kind of is. So we'll start
Functional.
with a quote from the handbook. And then I'll move into a fight I once had with a level 4 CrossFit coach about the term functional. And I don't even remember his name. I tried to look it up a second ago, but I can't find him anymore because I unfollowed him on Instagram because he was super annoying.
I bet he has rogue socks.
If anybody, somebody can slide into the DMs and tell me, because I'm sure people who follow this follow him. The CrossFit level 4 coach who, like, all of his content is just pictures of him holding a whiteboard that he wrote something on. That guy. If you know who he is, slide in and tell me his name because I forgot it. Functional movements are universal motor recruitment patterns.
This is from CrossFit.
This is from the handbook.
Okay.
They are performed in a wave of contraction from core to extremity, and they are compound movements. They are multi-joint. They are natural, effective, and efficient locomotors of body and external objects. But no aspect of functional movements is more important than their capacity to move large loads over long distances and to do so quickly. Collectively, these three attributes, load, distance, and speed, uniquely qualify functional movements for the production of high power.
I disagree.
That is the definition.
Long, slow distance running is the most functional human movement. I mean, there's a whole argument.
That is where I got into the fight with him, because he posted something about, like, which exercise is more functional than another exercise. It was pretty dumb. And so I asked him, like, what does CrossFit mean when they're talking about functional? And we had a back and forth a little bit. It started in the comments. It moved to the DMs. He's a pretty reasonable dude. But
how did he move it? How did he move it to the DM? How did that? Like, hey, we're taking this backstage, bro.
This is like pre-podcast. This is at least 2 years ago.
But did you take it to the DMs or did he?
I don't remember.
I love that.
But what he ultimately ended up saying is, like, he admitted
step that outside.
The fundamental definition that CrossFit uses for functional is maximal power production. Load times distance divided by time. But that, like, doesn't work because, like, tons of CrossFit's staple exercises are, like, fail that definition horribly. Like handstand walks, handstand pushups, terrible in terms of, like, force production over time, right? It would mean that, like, the ultimate exercise is either, like, a deadlift or a sled push, and it's always better than all other exercises because you can accomplish the most work in the least time. Like, I don't know. It doesn't mean anything. It's not helpful. Functional equals power in CrossFit's mind.
I think CrossFit really fell in love with its own mythology of, like, some, like, primitive man, woman moving around, eating apples from the tree and, like, running and hunting. And we're so primal. And look at us. And, like, I think honestly, Greg Glassman probably thought that, like, there was a barbell in the cave and they did some thrusters and occasionally handstand walk down to the river and drank from the waters of life. And that narrative drives so much of CrossFit. And then they realized that, oh shit, we should put, like, some math behind this. So they added some physics equations and just basically made it so complicated that nobody could question it. And if I'm saying all that and it just kind of sounds like scientific research, I think you could probably make a case that there's some of that there too. But yeah, I'm with you. I think all of this kind of falls apart when you start to ask questions or slide into somebody's DMs.
One of my biggest frustrations, and we'll probably cover a couple of these as we keep moving through this episode, but
just picturing Adam and Eve doing thrusters now.
It's the internal contradictions in the manual where they say one thing on one page and they say something that explicitly contradicts that thing. I'll do one just because it's on the same page. It's like the most egregious one I found. They say, our athletes are trained to bike, run, swim, and row at short, middle, and long distances, guaranteeing exposure and competency in each of the three main metabolic pathways. Now Drew's triggered because we're talking about energy systems.
I was going to say,
skip that.
That's
skip
wrong.
It. There's not time. But then later on the same page, the exact same page, I didn't even have to turn a page for this one. They say, at CrossFit, we work exclusively with compound movements and shorter high-intensity cardiovascular sessions. And in the context of that paragraph, they are basically saying that all of their cardio is shorter than 20 minutes. Like, come on. Like, what? Like, it doesn't, like, even if you believe the first part, you cannot believe the second part. And if you believe the second part, you cannot believe the first part. The math ain't math.
There's a, God, I can't remember his name. He was, like, one of the early endurance gurus for CrossFit.
Oh,
Brian
is he still the
McKenzie.
one?
Brian
No, that's not the guy I was
McKenzie
thinking of.
was his
Never mind.
name. So this is an interesting aside for folks talking about the history of CrossFit. So when CrossFit came out doing what they're doing, which is this high intensity, really short.
Isn't it Chris Hinshaw now?
Chris Henshaw is the guy now, but prior it was Brian McKenzie's buddies with Kelly Starrett. So I think Kelly Starrett's fantastic, by the way. But what was interesting was that CrossFit and Brian McKenzie and company basically started saying that, like, oh my God, because these athletes, these long distance, like endurance athletes, they started doing high intensity work and they are performing so much better than they had been for years. And they used that as the argument for intensity being better than volume. And if you look into some of the sort of mid-2000s CrossFit commentary type thing, this is when they started to say, for example, like doing CrossFit is a great way to train for an Ironman or, you know, insert whatever long distance.
But they repeatedly shit on Ironman athletes throughout the handbook.
Well, what was interesting was come to find out, and this isn't like a very well publicized thing, but come to find out what was actually happening was what happens in any appropriate training methodology, which is you take somebody that has a huge base, an aerobic base, which we've talked about, zone two, take somebody that has this massive aerobic base, introduce a little bit of intensity at the right time and effectively sharpen the knife, they will perform really well. So to their credit, they had introduced high intensity to folks that had not really done it before. What they didn't really realize is if you keep doing high intensity at the expense of that long, slow aerobic base building, the athlete stops performing well. And so they had to walk back a lot of the claims that they had been making in kind of the mid-2000s about how high intensity is so much better than volume. And I think they've kind of arrived now at a point where they recognize at least that, like, there's a place for both things. But I do get a little upset when I hear them talk, oh, it's high intensity functional fitness, you know, blah, 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 blah. It's like, well, low intensity is really good too at, you know, at the right time and place.
I'm dangerously close to like going over the edge into a giant rabbit hole here.
I'll pull you out.
I don't know if I have any of the quotes pulled out here ready to go, but they go really hard on describing like 5K runners and marathon runners and Ironman athletes and stuff as just like not good and not healthy and it's bad for them. And then they bring in people from those space. Like they've declared Chris Hinshaw as their expert on aerobic capacity for the whole organization. Like I don't understand how they square that circle a little bit. I'm gonna try and find something relevant here. This one stood out to me as extremely frustrating because it's just objectively false and they didn't even like pretend to back it up with anything. It's one of the times where they say studies have shown and it kills me, but it is also worth mentioning that the Olympic lifts are the only lifts shown to increase maximal oxygen uptake, the most important marker for cardiovascular fitness. Drew's having a mild aneurysm right now. We know that's not true. It did make me wonder because like I know the time frame this was written, and my first thought on the flight, I did not have any Wi-Fi, so I had to Google it after I landed. But my first thought was Greg Glassman friends with Tim Noakes? Because that would be my first thought. Because at the time, Tim Noakes was on the record saying some very specific stuff about like VO2 max doesn't really change with training, whatever, whatever. But all that research was done on people who were already like collegiate level endurance athletes. And with like Gen Pop, you can improve maximal oxygen uptake with almost any physical activity at all. Resistance training will do it, walking will do it, jogging will do it. Almost anything, if somebody is untrained, will improve maximal oxygen uptake. So the claim that the Olympic lifts are somehow like magical in that they are also cardio, it's just not the case. I did go back and look it up, and Greg Glassman was friends with Tim Noakes. People should know that a lot of Tim Noakes's stuff has been updated or changed since then. That doesn't make Tim Noakes a bad scientist. It just means that you have to update your beliefs when new evidence comes out.
Were they talking about Olympic lifts done for like multiple repetitions?
Probably, which is one of the core things that people get mad at CrossFit for, but it didn't specifically say that.
I get mad at CrossFit for that.
Go off.
Well, no, I just think like one of the things I don't like about CrossFit is that there is this tendency to just cycle. And by cycle, I mean just do like multiple reps, but like cycle these high skill barbell movements. So I'm thinking of like a snatch, clean and jerk.
I should pull out another couple quotes from the handbook that you'll probably have thoughts on. They say, We place a heavy emphasis on Olympic weightlifting, having seen the sport's unique ability to develop an athlete's explosive power, control of external objects, and mastery of critical recruitment patterns. They say Olympic lifters are without a doubt the world's strongest athletes.
It's also
there. There are a few other sports, and it depends on your definition of strength, and it's probably more power than strength. But I think anything with that technical an element, I don't know if that's strength anymore or technique. I think a lot of world's strongest man competitors and powerlifting competitors might take issue with the claim that Olympic weightlifters are the strongest athletes. I'm no problem with Olympic weightlifting. It's an awesome sport.
It's hard for me because, like, I think CrossFit, on the one hand, probably saved Olympic weightlifting.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I have to give kudos there. But on the other hand, you do see people who have no business doing a snatch being told that they should do like 21 of them for time.
One of my least favorite things I see in military gyms is a well-meaning squad leader taking his squad into the gym and having them do something like Grace, when not a single one of those soldiers has been trained.
Grace is a workout, by the way.
Yeah. CrossFit likes to name their workouts.
I could be
totally wrong here, but I think Grace is like 30 reps ground to overhead for time.
I think you can do it however you want.
You can do it as a clean and jerk. You can do it as a power snatch, whatever. But you take a bunch of soldiers in who have like basically no familiarity with barbells, certainly no familiarity with either the clean and jerk or the snatch, and just have them do a bunch of it as fast as they can. And it's never a good idea.
And that's where I think, and I don't know how you cram this into a weekend course. I just wish, and caveat here, maybe they have put some of this out and I just haven't seen it, but like, I just wish that there was less of this like ride or die mentality of like, you've got to do 30 snatches for time, and like more of a conversation of what are we trying to get out of it? Like, what are we wanting to accomplish with 30 snatches for time? Is it, you know, a ton of exposure to hip extension? Is it like quarter extremity that we talked about? Because if you go at it from that direction, you open up conversation around how can we scale this? How can we, like, and I know CrossFit's really big on scaling, and I think some coaches scale things really well and appropriately, and good for them. But at the end of the day, going back to the quality control and just sort of the overall brand, if you are creating an environment where people are just yelling and screaming and rooting each other on, you're going to end up with that 65-year-old individual doing a ton of snatches with weight that they probably shouldn't, and doing, but you know, putting the risk potentially outweighing the reward. So again, I don't know how you solve for that other than to just like, hey guys, like maybe like take a step back and just talk about what we're trying to do versus how we're trying to do it. I don't know.
Should we like take a break and talk about some things we like about CrossFit?
I was just about to say that, man. It's like we almost wrote that out. We didn't, but we should. Like, what do we like about CrossFit? What do we like about it? What do you like about it, Alex?
There's a bunch of things I like about it. I'll share one. And again, I will use a quote from the handbook because there's good stuff in here. They have said, "We have learned that harnessing the natural camaraderie, competition, and fun of sport or game yields an intensity that cannot be matched by other means." And followers of the Instagram page will have known that I've recently gone down a deep rabbit hole on the difference in the effects between leisure time physical activity and occupational physical activity and how that applies to the military. I think by like aggressively taking the fun out of fitness, by like turning it into scripted drill and ceremony drills and doing it at a time when people are uncomfortable and in a uniform people are too cold in and whatever, whatever, I think you take something away from exercise. I've said before on the podcast that like outdoor social physical activity, there may be just as much benefits from the outdoor and the social component as there is from the physical activity component. And when you start to make fitness miserable, you take something important away from it. And so I think, although it comes with some consequences that aren't always good, CrossFit's embrace of competition is valuable, and CrossFit's embrace of like building communities and culture is absolutely unquestionably valuable.
Probably a make fitness fun again. We could massage that acronym and maybe, I don't know, do like a hat. Maybe the hat's red, so people, it like draws the eye. Maybe we do like a four letter, I don't know, make fitness. We'll think about that one. No one else is doing that at the time, so I think there's an opportunity there. So in an effort to save myself from rambling, I've written down sort of three things that I think CrossFit does well. And there's probably some of these are probably two-sided coins in the sense that there's some negatives to it. And I might mention that for one of these, but what CrossFit does well, coaching. I think I've mentioned some of that. I think one of the things that I do like about CrossFit is that prior to CrossFit, you did have group classes. You know, Zumba, Pilates, whatever, like group classes were a thing, but there wasn't really coaching involved in that. You would have the instructor at the front doing the movement, and then you'd have a whole ton of people just copying them doing that movement. And, you know, I guess in their defense, a bunch of step ups is not really something that needs to be coached, but I think CrossFit introduced coaching to general population fitness. And by extension and by virtue of doing that, probably did a lot more good than bad for the coaching industry as a whole. There's a whole hell of a lot more jobs out there for coaches because of CrossFit. And I think I said this earlier, and I'll say it again. Coaching CrossFit is probably one of the best things you could do as a coach. And it's certainly something that I tell all young coaches that reach out to me, get your level one and coach in a CrossFit gym. Number one, you'll get free access to a gym that has some really great equipment. But then number two, you'll get a ton of reps in just working with people of different shapes and sizes. The second one that I think CrossFit has added as a net positive is movement. And we could go on and on about the things that we've already been going on and on about in terms of the negatives. But on the positive side of the movement spectrum, before CrossFit, you would never have heard two soccer moms comparing their deadlift or their back squat. And I think that in the larger conversation around just the health of human beings in a time where America is like massively obese and struggling with all of that, to have created a situation where it was normalized to talk about that kind of stuff and pursue that kind of stuff, I think is an awesome thing. And kind of on that same note, just as somebody who has coached a lot of CrossFit, seeing, and I don't mean to just say that this is a female thing, but it always seemed to play out that there would be women that would come into the class for the first time, generally a little bit older, generally having never done this type of thing before and thinking that they couldn't. And then after having worked with them for a couple of months, seeing them just like check the box on so many things, whether it's a box jump, getting their first double under, doing a pull up, like you talk about something that takes somebody from where they thought they were to where they are now. And, you know, whether it's mental health or whatever, like that to me is an awesome thing that CrossFit added to the world. And then similarly to that one, my third point, and we can riff on any of these, but the third one for me is lifestyle. And maybe this opens up the conversation about nutrition. I'm not sure, but I have always said from the very beginning that CrossFit is a gateway drug. I think that's very true. I think that people think CrossFit's cool. They get involved in it. They start doing it. And maybe they realize that if they had a little bit more flexibility, they might be able to PR that back squat that they want to PR. And so they start looking at yoga. Or maybe they realize that if they could just breathe a little bit better, that Metcon might be a little bit easier. So they start looking at running. And maybe they sign up for a 5K with their kid or with their spouse. Maybe they realize that losing a little bit of weight makes sense for them. And so they start eating a little bit healthier and they start looking at nutrition. And so the gateway drug aspect of CrossFit, in the sense that it opens people up to so many different things that they might otherwise not have opened themselves up to, I think that's an unquestionably good thing. And you don't see that in a Zumba class or a Pilates class or a yoga class. Typically people that do yoga just kind of only do yoga. Whereas people that do CrossFit, I mean, man, go to the starting line of any Spartan race or any 5K or any, I mean, honestly, probably any marathon. And you'll probably see a handful of like douchey looking people wearing Metcons that are like, well, yeah, I'm doing this marathon. Like, do you think you can actually do it? Hell yeah, I can do it. Like, CrossFitters think they can do a lot of things. And I think that that's pretty awesome. So for better or for worse, you do kind of walk out of that environment thinking like, oh yeah, like climb Kilimanjaro for sure. Let's go do it. So I think those are good things. So coaching, movement, and lifestyle, those are kind of my big three, and we can pick any of those apart.
One, I'll riff off of yours, and then I'll share another one I really like that's separate from yours. You mentioned like coaching at a CrossFit gym, giving you an access to a gym that has a bunch of great equipment you can use. I think CrossFit's impact on what equipment you will find in commercial gyms and how commercial gyms are set up has been massive. Like plenty of commercial gyms would never have had barbells before, or certainly not the number they do now. Platforms, bumper plates, all those things are unique to like CrossFit's influence. Rowers being a common thing outside of like rowing team facilities, 100% CrossFit. Assault bikes. If you see like ropes to climb in commercial gyms, that is totally attributable to CrossFit. Kettlebells being popular in America, that's probably
No,
CrossFit.
dude, that's Pavel.
I mean, Pavel has his place, and everybody should listen to a Pavel audiobook voiced
Dude's
by Pavel.
insane.
It will
Guy's
get you
insane.
going. Simple and Sinister, baby. Everybody's got to do it at some point. But like
Oh.
their influence on the equipment and facilities landscape of fitness in America has been dramatic, and that's worth a shout out.
I mean, this is probably intentionally dramatic, but I think CrossFit might have saved fitness. It would be interesting to see what the fitness, because I mean, we've seen
I
if
don't know.
you,
Stuff was already happening with Nautilus and things like that. Like,
yeah, maybe, but like you were seeing bodybuilding and you were seeing like aerobic stuff.
yeah.
And I just wonder if we bookmark 2000 as the time when CrossFit started, and then what is that now, 24 years ago? The rise in obesity rates and just the sheer like disregard that Americans have for all things health and wellness. I think the fact that CrossFit has been able to make noise even as that has gone on is pretty interesting. And I wonder if without that, what like gyms and things would look like, because you're seeing like PE classes going away, like all this kind of stuff happening alongside the obesity epidemic and just, you know, public health, all that kind of stuff. I think the only way that fitness will have kept the pace that it has kept is because of this massive kind of community driven, I'm going to use the word functional fitness here, but like that whole thing. So I don't know. That's probably a completely misinformed take, but without CrossFit, I don't think I'd be able to walk into Dick's Sporting Goods and buy a pair of weightlifting shoes. Like that's insane to
True.
me. So
Yeah, it's true.
as you were talking, I added a fourth one to my list, which is Marketplace, because to your point, I think CrossFit saved Reebok. Unfortunately, CrossFit introduced Noble. Don't get me started on Noble. Maybe I will get started on Noble. Like, just, I mean, you developed a shoe and then you just copy and pasted it 100 times and changed the color. Like, give me some technology or something. Like, come on. And
They
also,
have
I
high
think,
top versions of the shoe. They have
shut
two,
up.
they have two whole shoes.
I think Noble is to blame for $120 being the entry point for shoes these days. It's asinine. Like, give me a Metcon 2 any day of the week. Or not a Metcon. What is the Reebok
Nano,
Nanos? Nano 2, best fitness
are
shoe
you
out there.
an untied nanos kind of
I
coach?
don't tie any of my shoes.
There you go.
So,
Everybody who's been in the space knows that there's a brand of coach who's all about their not laced up nanos.
if we look back in history, there's a year like that, just generations of history, and you think of just some figures like Napoleon,
Oh God, where's this going?
Caesar. I'm running out of famous people's name. Jesus. You think about these people. The mid 2000s CrossFit coach, I think, stands tall with those people. And I'm thinking just from top to bottom, like the what is the jumper?
Born primitive shorts,
Born primitive
Reband knee
shorts.
sleeves.
Maybe Hylete shorts, Reebann
Oh
knee
yeah,
sleeves,
Hylete would probably be a better one.
running a 400 meter warm up with Reebann knee sleeves on. Like you
Yep.
can't. Nanos, you mentioned high top Rogue
Nanos that are
socks,
not tied.
not
Yeah.
tied. The knee sleeves, the lifting belt that's worn loosely when you're doing other movements, and then when you step up to the barbell, tighten that shit. Even though you're doing a ton of reps and you need to breathe, we've chalked up our cheeks, we've chalked up our hands, we've chalked up our knees. We've chalked up our shorts so that barbell glides over the shorts. Yeah, I think that I close my mind and I think about competitions that I competed in over the years, and that individual is standing right there, and he is just happy to see me. He even offers me some paleo granola.
I just want to say, John Fennell, if you're watching, thank you for being that figure in my
Yeah, hey, I was that guy for a long time. When I was in
life.
grad school, I was the captain of Scotland's CrossFit team in a multinational competition. So
Woo!
yeah, there you go. There's pictures of that somewhere out there. Do you want to touch on nutrition or no? I mean, we've gone on for a
Well,
while.
I want to knock out one more thing that I've taken from CrossFit that I really, really like.
Just want to Jesus and CrossFit coach. I just talking about cults and all. I mean, that's a hot take, but anyway.
I'm gonna see if I can look it up real fast because CrossFit did steal this from a predecessor.
CrossFit didn't steal anything, man. CrossFit made it all up.
So
It's all.
John Travis originally coined the concept of the illness wellness continuum. CrossFit took that and expanded it into what they call the sickness wellness fitness continuum.
Did they give
I
him
have
credit? Probably not.
not in the handbook, that's for sure. I think somewhere they've given him credit. I'm not sure. I'll go have to check that one out because I don't know if he ever got any credit for that. Greg Glassman is great at not citing sources, but I appreciate the sickness wellness fitness continuum. I use it so frequently. Like I used it this morning in a class that I taught.
Were you wearing nanos?
I was not wearing nanos, sorry. I'm a federal civilian. I was wearing khakis and a polo shirt probably.
I'm a federal civilian. I don't wear khakis and polo shirts.
So like Glassman took the illness wellness continuum, articulated the idea of fitness essentially being your buffer against injury, illness, and death. I have posted a version of the graphic on the Mops and Mo's Instagram before. I'll probably do a quick refresh on it and post it again in the future to kind of get that out there for people. I find it to be an incredibly valuable basis to start conversations with people about why they should care about fitness in the first place. And particularly in the military, I find it useful as a basis for a conversation to talk about fitness being important beyond just whatever fitness test you have to pass, whatever the body composition assessment you have to comply with is, like taking fitness to a bigger picture than that and how it influences your life and what stressors do to your current fitness wellness level, whatever it is. I don't have time to go through it all. I will just say that it has been very valuable for me in terms of having conversations around affective domain components of why people should care about fitness.
As far as I can remember, since the beginning, they were saying that like peak human performance isn't healthy. So I think kudos to them for that, because I could very easily see them falling into the trap of being like, oh, that's the most healthy people ever.
Yeah. You mentioned trying to go to nutrition. Before we get to nutrition, I do want to ask you a question again.
Is it a quiz question or like a what are your thoughts question?
This is another like you have your level two, so I'm going to quiz you
I
on what
don't,
CrossFit
it's
thinks still.
expired. Okay.
How does CrossFit define the word fitness?
Isn't it constantly varied something, something done at high intensity or something?
That's what they do.
I just remember that being on the back of the shirt that you get at your level one,
Yeah.
and they give you the shirt before you take the test. And so everyone puts the shirt on. And then when those questions are asked, you just look at the person in front of you and you write down what's on their shirt.
That's fair.
I don't remember what the definition of
So
fitness is.
Greg does not do a great job in the handbook of coming to a concise definition of the word fitness. They do have their fitness in 100 words thing,
That's what I'm thinking
which
of.
is what you're talking about. A lot of CrossFit gyms have it as like a poster on the wall and things like that. So that is what they use as their definition of fitness, but I don't think it's a particularly coherent definition of fitness for a couple reasons. I will share the like slight rant that Greg goes on where he calls out some people in the manual. This is a quote. Merriam-Webster's Collegiate Dictionary defines fitness and being fit as the ability to transmit genes and being healthy. No help there. Searching the internet for a workable, reasonable definition of fitness yields disappointingly little. Worse yet, the National Strength and Conditioning Association, the most respected publisher in exercise physiology, in its highly authoritative Essentials of Strength and Conditioning, does not even attempt a definition. When I read this, I got real mad because it's a huge straw man argument.
I get to see you by yourself reading it, just like, no,
Well,
no,
so like
wrong.
we criticize NSCA on here all the time,
No,
but what
yeah,
I'm
we do.
not going to criticize NSCA for is for failing to invent a new definition of a term just because it happens to be defined in a way that we don't like. And this conversation comes up a lot in the fitness world. I think we use the term fitness wrong. Like the way fitness is used in the exercise space is absolutely a bastardization of the original concept. So fitness, the term as it's used today, is a colloquialism, and it is not at all what was meant when Herbert Spencer coined the phrase survival of the fittest. No, it was not Charles Darwin that coined the phrase. Herbert was inspired by Darwin, and Darwin later started using the phrase in his books. But survival of the fittest is what people think of when they think fitness. And it, in its original sense, it means does something fit into the evolutionary niche in which it functions. It has nothing to do with strength or speed or aerobic capacity or anything like that. The hummingbirds have incredibly long tongues that wrap around their brains, and it makes it good at feeding in the depths of flowers. That has nothing to do with fitness, but it is a important fit into an evolutionary niche. The thick and water resistant coat of a polar bear makes it fit in an environment where it's like swimming in Arctic waters and clambering across icebergs and stuff like that. That's not fitness, it's fitting. That is what it is. And trying to universally define it based on things people do in the gym is absolutely ridiculous. I will see if I can find the Darwin quote on this one.
Big CrossFitter, Darwin.
Let's see. I'm just going to Google survival of the fittest. So Darwin's quote was, "It is not the strongest of the species that survives, nor the most intelligent, but the one most responsive to change." It is, do you fit in your environment? It has like fitness and survival of the fittest, and being fit is about the literal sense of the word fit. Like the way a puzzle piece fits, that is fitness. Do you fit into your environment?
So the word fit a lot.
I know. And we misuse the word all the time. And that makes me mad. I mean, you're talking about it, but like,
yeah.
Greg Glassman deciding to get mad at Merriam-Webster and NSCA for not coming up with made up definitions of a word that already has a definition.
It was a straw man argument. It's like, whoa, guy.
Anyway, I'm done.
Well, I think as you were talking about that, I think one of my favorite things about CrossFit that I only recently actually remembered is one of my favorite things. The fitness in 100 words. Have you seen that?
Yeah. That's what we were just talking about.
Yeah. So did we didn't read the 100 words, did we?
No. Should we read it?
Yeah. I got it right in front of me. So
okay, go.
Because I looked this up because the nutrition piece is, yeah. I'm not going to count how many words of it that is, but so here it is. I'll read you guys 100 words. Eat meat and vegetables, nuts and seeds, some fruit, little starch, and no sugar. And I've seen versions of this where it says no added sugar, which I'm probably more inclined to go with. So maybe that's 101
words.
101 words. Eat meat, vegetables, nuts, seeds, some fruit, little starch, and no sugar. Keep intake to levels that will support exercise, but not body fat. Practice and train major lifts, deadlift, clean, squat, presses, clean and jerks, and snatch. Similarly, master the basics of gymnastics, pull-ups, dips, rope climb, push-ups, sit-ups, presses to handstand, pirouettes, flips, splits, and holds. Bike, run, swim, row, etc. Hard and fast. 5 or 6 days per week, mix these elements in as many combinations and patterns as creativity will allow. Routine is the enemy. Keep workouts short and intense. Regularly learn and play new sports. So a couple things there. They don't say clean and jerk. They say C and J. So they get away with a couple of words there. ETC for et cetera is included. So I don't know if that counts towards the 100.
Waste of a word.
I would agree with probably most of this. I think that they leave out routine is the enemy. I don't think that that's true. I think routine is very important, especially when we talk about progress.
Before you keep going, I want to ask you another question, right? So CrossFit's about the unknown and the unknowable and being good at everything, right?
The hopper.
Is CrossFit actually anything resembling random or infinite or unknown or unknowable? I don't think they even come close.
Well, I mean,
I think they're highly specialized in certain random things.
Fair.
I'll give an example, right? If you grabbed proficient CrossFit athletes, are they going to be good at jumping rope?
Yes.
Are they going to be good at walking on their hands?
Yes.
Are they going to be good at throwing stuff accurately?
No. And if you've seen the softball toss, I don't remember the year of that event, but that was in the CrossFit Games. Talk about some non-athletic ripped people. Oh my God. Dude.
Are they, I've never seen a CrossFit athlete hit a ball with a bat.
Rich Froning plays baseball, bro.
I don't think I've ever seen, and I could be wrong here. There may have been events that I haven't been aware of. I've never seen a contact event in CrossFit. Yeah,
no, they wrestled 1 year.
Did they really?
I think so. I think there was like a sumo. Maybe I'm thinking of American Gladiator.
Because despite, like, if you wanted to create something that was like
functional and universal
and stuff like that, I think like it would involve contact, and there's tons of contact sports, but they never incorporate that.
But again, I think where CrossFit has done a good job with, and this is getting a little bit into the CrossFit games, but they are testing a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, you can make the argument like decathletes or, you know, whatever, and fair enough, and triathlon, okay. Like there are examples of multiple modalities taking place in a singular competition, but I think it kind of goes back to that question, because if you win the CrossFit Games, you're considered the fittest person alive or in history or whatever. I don't think that's true, but I will give credit to CrossFit for showing that a lot of what we think we thought about what humans are capable of is basically a lie. And you'd be hard pressed to find somebody outside of CrossFit that can snatch 300 pounds and run a sub-5 in a mile. I mean, that's insane to me. Mm-hmm. And prior to CrossFit, nobody would have ever thought you could do that. Most strength coaches still don't think you can do that. And they'll just say that everyone's true. On steroids, which, you know, may or may not be true, but credit to CrossFit for at least trying. But yeah, the 100 words thing. And I know we kind of left that open. I would say no added sugar. I think sugar is fine. Fruit is sugar. And there are some people in CrossFit that think fruit's bad, which is stupid. The movements are great. I was saying routine. I don't think routine is the enemy. I think routine is an important part of progressing. I think you can have some variety. Keep workouts short and intense. Disagree. I think there's a lot of space for long, slow workouts. We've talked about
unquestionably.
That. Ad nauseum. Bike, run, swim, row, et cetera, hard and fast. Yeah, but also bike, run, swim, row, slow and long. So I think if we were to put fitness, it'd be like 137 words, but you know, that's not as sexy. You can't put it on a poster. So
man, maybe we should work on our definition at some point.
Well, they have a
my
cool
definition
poster.
Is just gonna be the Merriam-Webster definition of fitness, and we're not gonna make up new definitions for terms for no reason.
Well, they have, so the poster they sell, you can buy this. It's fitness in 100 words. It's one of those classic, like,
don't sell product for them while we're criticizing.
Well, it's this word cloud, you know, where you have all the words, and it's interesting because most of the words are in black. I'm going to read to you the words that are in red. Ready? 100. No sugar. Practice. Train. The basics. Hard. Fast. Routine is the enemy. Play new sports. So I don't know if they meant for me to like pull those out and be like, okay, no sugar, practice, train, the basics, hard, fast, routine's the enemy, play new sports. Maybe sugar made the cut. Some fruit didn't make the cut, which actually, now that I look at that, saying eat some fruit and no sugar,
it's impossible.
You can't.
Yeah, there's sugar and fruit.
So maybe 100. So,
I think the added sugar was implied sugar probably.
I don't know. Not much is implied in CrossFit. It's all law. It's in the handbook. Anyway, so to close this, or to work this towards a close, because I know we have been going on for a while, give me your elevator pitch on CrossFit.
My elevator pitch on CrossFit?
Mm-hmm. For or against, briefly, why?
For, largely because...
No, not both. For or. You have to basically just summarize it in an elevator pitch.
Oh, my total thoughts.
Mm-hmm. We're on an elevator. You have about a minute.
I think CrossFit is flawed in the same way that basically anybody who tries to be right on every single topic is always going to be flawed. But I think that CrossFit has done a tremendous amount of good in reintroducing a bunch of modalities that would otherwise have been forgotten or remained in dusty corners of weird gyms. And I think their focus on the affective, community, competitive aspect stands apart as uniquely valuable in getting people to care and buy into a lifestyle where they worry about their fitness.
Bing. We got to the first floor. Well done. I guess it's my turn now. Yeah, I think honestly, and I'll say this kind of intentionally as a hot take, I think CrossFit's the best thing that's ever happened to fitness. I don't know if Greg Glassman is the best thing that's ever happened to fitness, but I think
he's a problem.
Yeah, I think CrossFit is I don't think you could point to another singular brand or just sort of philosophy around fitness that is as enabling or all encompassing as CrossFit. And that might be a bad thing in the sense that you do have a lot of coaches just prescribing what they think is CrossFit as the answer to every problem that they ever encounter. But I also think that it's a good thing for a lot of the reasons that you mentioned. It exposes people to a ton of different modalities that they might not otherwise chase after. We didn't even touch on the mental health piece of all of this, but I think Exposing human beings to complex movements that they might not otherwise think that they're capable of doing, surrounding them with a community of people that genuinely care and believe in them and will applaud them and like root them on, even if they're the last one doing things. I think that is a huge plus for the fitness industry. And I think that more coaches would do well to acknowledge what CrossFit has done, because I think what we see a lot of times is coaches bitching about CrossFit while wearing Nobles and pulling their lifting shoes out of their bag that they bought at Dick's Sporting Goods, which are all things that we just mentioned are due to CrossFit.
All right. I know you're trying to draw us to a close. Should we do like a speed round where I just launch some quotes from the handbook at you and get your thoughts? Because there's a bunch of stuff we haven't covered yet, and we didn't really go that deep on nutrition either.
Sure. Worst case, it becomes a two-part episode.
Fair. Okay. I'm going to find someone, a few of these, and I will include nutrition in this. Direct quote: if strength at high heart rates is fundamental to your sport, then you'd best perform your resistance training at a high heart rate.
Yes, that's called specificity.
How do you feel about that being applied to Olympic weightlifting?
Stupid. It's not the sport.
I think even your first answer would probably trigger a lot of strength coaches.
Specificity.
The encouraging of doing the bulk or all of resistance training at a high heart rate.
If your sport is resistance training at high heart rate, you should do resistance training at high heart rate.
Oh,
Wait.
but that's not what they're talking about in the handbook. They're talking about soccer players, football players, anybody who has to apply strength when their heart rate's high.
I mean, now you're kind of getting into work capacity, but
Which is probably something we can credit to CrossFit for
I think
making a
so.
mainstream part of fitness.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I see where they're getting at. I don't think you could use that to justify the efficacy of doing 30 snatches for time. I think
I don't
that's
think so
like
either.
it's a cart before the horse thing. Anyway,
Cool.
next quote.
This is not so rapid fire, but I do want to knock out some of the lunacy on nutrition that is in here.
Count your almonds.
So they do specify that everybody should be, well, as a baseline, not everybody, because they go into some more specific situations later. 30% protein, 40% carbs, 30% fat. That's their baseline for anybody. But I'll scroll down to the part where they go a little off the rails. And they talk about the zone diet a lot, and they do say CrossFit's best performers are zone eaters. I do not believe that that statement is true,
That's not true at
even a
all.
little bit today.
Is zone still a thing?
I don't really think so, but it's still in the handbook. They
That
talk about
never made
block meal
sense to me.
prescriptions because that's part of the zone thing.
That never made
And
sense to me.
when they lay out calorie or like breakdown diets for different block meal prescriptions, they break it into like off the street guy, kind of fit guy, well athletic muscled guy, off the street
Me.
woman, decently fit woman, well athletic muscled woman. And in their prescription, they still have like an elite fitness competitor type of woman eating less than the least fit men. And I don't buy it. Like, it's just made up and
I don't.
arbitrary. And it doesn't say anything about body weight, and it doesn't say anything about total activity. Like, it's, I
I
don't know.
just remember in my level one test, you had to like one of the questions was like, how many almonds should this person eat? Because they have this
Yeah,
many,
because it's a block. That's how they
which
do
I
like
don't
block
remember.
units.
It like massively overcomplicated, which makes me wonder if like, did CrossFit salvage more eating problems or did it create more eating
I think it created
problems?
more eating problems. Well, I don't know about that. I think it gets
I
people to think
got
about whole
you.
foods and like limit soda and things like that. And a lot of those things are good. So I
Yeah.
don't know if I have a strong stance on whether they've done more to help or hurt in the
I
nutrition
think
space.
paleo is a really good thing.
Oh boy.
There's a hot take. I love just throwing those out there.
No, I can't agree with that.
I think so. I have, you know,
Paleo,
because.
first of all, does not even remotely resemble how Paleolithic humans ate.
But you know what I
That's
mean.
complete bullshit.
Capital P paleo, not lowercase p paleolithic, because no caveman was eating desiccated
Are
coconut.
you talking about like paleo in the sense of like meat, veggies, and fruit,
I'm
like mostly
talking
meat and
about
veggies?
paleo in the sense of like if somebody comes to me, because this has happened a lot, and you've got them for like an hour session or whatever, and they just want something to follow from a nutritional standpoint, I'll tell them to look at paleo. Because
What
if
even
it,
is paleo? A modern paleo diet
that's the
includes fruits,
thing.
vegetables, lean meats, fish, eggs, nuts, and seeds.
Yeah.
You're just telling people to eat whole foods.
I know, but I could say all the things you just said, or I could say just go buy the paleo magazine, which
Oh,
sadly
God.
doesn't exist anymore. I think paleo is legit. I think it's funny because if you threw a chocolate chip cookie into a cave, a caveman would likely eat it.
Yes.
So, and again, I don't think too many Paleolithic Neanderthals were like, oh, don't like Gronk. I hope that that's friggin' coconut oil because if that's olive oil, you're gonna die of a heart attack.
There's
I think
nothing uniquely
that's,
bad about seed oils.
well, I
People can slide
mean,
into my DMs to get mad about that.
that's just, we should do an oil conversation.
Oh, God.
I think paleo, I don't know, flavor of the week with the freaking diet stuff.
I just want to pull out the most uniquely
I will say
ridiculous.
paleo is way better than keto and way
Yeah,
better than
no doubt.
carnivore. Carnivore is stupid, Joe Rogan.
You're putting it up against the most,
I don't know, man. A lot of
objectively dumb
those,
diets.
you go to
Anyway,
any CrossFit competition, you're gonna have your carnivore people, you're gonna have your paleo people.
dietitians are going to be in my DMs after this one.
Eat a
Anyway,
well-balanced diet.
so I just want to pull out the most uniquely absurd nutrition quote from the handbook that just rattled me reading it. So the whole idea is eat in a way that sustains
Just,
performance but does not
I'm
allow body
sorry.
fat.
I'm sorry. You read this on the plane and you've mentioned a couple of times getting pissed off at different things. I'm just
Yeah.
picturing you in your seat, just like shaking your tray, like,
It was bad. So
bring me another
you're supposed
coffee.
to go off of the block prescription based on which category you fit into,
Which doesn't make sense.
which correct, not accounting for body fat or resting metabolic rate or any of those things is pretty stupid. But so the protocol they have is if you follow that block, but you're losing weight to a degree that it's negatively impacting your performance, do you know what the solution is?
So you're doing your block
Yeah, you're following your blocks,
based on your
you're losing
archetype.
weight, but it's limiting your performance.
What's their solution? Perform better.
Their solution is double your fat.
Double your fat. That's not right.
And then if you are still struggling with performance, what do?
Triple your fat.
You do it again.
Seriously?
And it says, and this is straight out of it says some CrossFit athletes get to quintuple fat, which means you have a ratio of 14% protein or 14 blocks protein, 18 blocks carbs, 68 blocks fat.
Which, if the block stuff makes no sense to you, you're not alone. It makes no sense to me. But this is where you end up with, sorry, you end up with like assholes chewing on sticks of butter and
That's
be like, oh, it's
insane.
in my freaking.
That doesn't make any sense. And it's where you get the
Listen.
people that are in the CrossFit paleo world who are afraid of carbs.
Well, that, I mean, okay. So that you could, that's separate from CrossFit. That's just a failure of the nutrition industry as a whole.
Sure.
When we think about Atkins diets and carbs versus fats, it's interesting to me that CrossFit goes on and on about high intensity. Carbohydrates fuel high intensity, fat
Yes.
fuels low intensity. So if you're
Yes.
quadrupling your fat, yeah. Anyway,
Doesn't make any sense.
you had a
I talked to a
conversation.
CrossFit guy not that long ago who was like, he said if he consumed a different ratio where it was too many carbs, he would just blow up and get fat, even if the total calories are still the same. It's just
We need to have another
foundationally
dietitian on.
untrue. What else do I need to sling at you? We have not discussed CrossFit's nine foundational movements.
I get so triggered when people, because you see this in a lot of different disciplines. Like CrossFit has nine of them. Different coach, I can't think of names right now, but like, there, I know some coaches have seven, other coaches like,
Well, you're level two. What are the nine foundational movements?
I don't know. Squat,
Nope.
press, no, press,
Neither of those are on there.
hinge.
The air squat, the front
Okay, come
squat,
on. That's,
the overhead squat. Oh,
oh
shoulder
wait.
press is on there. Push press, push jerk, deadlift, sumo deadlift, high pull. Medicine ball clean.
So what they should have called those is the nine foundational movements for CrossFit, because there's no gait in there. There's no, that's all
Sure.
sagittal movements.
And
So there's
there
no
is a defense
rotational.
I will make in CrossFit's benefit that I don't know if they intended for these to be universal foundation movements. I think
I don't
they
know.
intended them to be tools to train coaches.
Yeah, well, they teach you to teach these movements. Like, these are the
Correct.
movements
The
that they
level one
teach
is
at the
teaching these
level. Yeah.
movements. Yeah.
So I think if you say
But
that these
putting
are, f
overhead squat on your list of foundational movements,
Yeah, but then you get into the whole argument about how that's the most functional. Like I've
But
seen
that's where my debate with the CrossFit Level 4 guy started, is that like it's the most functional, but by CrossFit's own definition, how much weight can you move over the greatest range in the least time? The overhead squat is objectively not very functional by their own definition.
Yeah, but I would think that there would be a linear relationship between longevity and the amount of weight you can overhead squat.
Maybe. I don't know if anybody studied that one.
There's a PhD for somebody.
I think
I
it's
need to do more
functional in
overhead
the hard
squats.
to define version of functional that some people have in their head of it challenges both strength and mobility and stability and like your ability to maintain stiffness through your core and a whole
And
bunch
it's
of things that might all be
scary.
valuable,
It's just scary.
but it's certainly not foundational.
Well, they think it is.
I don't know. Anyway, we don't have enough time to go deeper on that one. I'm going to start scrolling through the notes and see if there's anything on here. Oh, I got a fun one for you. Quote, athletes engaged in sports or training where a preponderance of the training load is spent in aerobic efforts witness decreases in muscle mass, strength, speed, and power. It is not uncommon to find marathoners with a vertical leap of only several inches. Furthermore, aerobic activity has a pronounced tendency to decrease anaerobic capacity.
Well, the last part's not true at all. That's actually the opposite. The first part is arguably true in the sense that, yeah, Eliud Kipchoge probably doesn't have the greatest vertical jump, but he also doesn't train to be explosive and powerful.
Yeah.
So,
It, I don't think aerobic capacity took away those things from him. I just
no,
think he
it's
doesn't
just
train those things.
right. Like me playing golf doesn't take away from my ability to be a world-class Formula One driver. I just don't know how to start a Formula One car because I've never tried. I think this, some of this, and I'm literally thinking about this right now, but like, I just wonder how much of the CrossFit methodology is designed to support the marketing of trying to drive somebody to spend $250 a month to go to a 60-minute class. Because if I'm sitting there in my handbook talking about how a, 60 to 90 minute steady state run is the best thing for you, you're not going to come to my class and do thrusters for 15 minutes. So I don't know. I haven't investigated that really any further than what I am now. But yeah, the last part just physiologically is not true.
I think, I mean, most of it's not true. The last
Most
part
of
is
it's
just the
not true.
least true.
Most of it's not true. So, yeah.
All right. I mean, I have more we could go off on, but I think we've already gone long. Is there
Keep
anything
going.
else?
Just split it into two parts.
No, I mean, we're already there. It's done, man.
No, I think back to our elevator pitches. Hopefully, people don't walk away from this episode thinking that we're super pro CrossFit. Hopefully, people don't walk away from this episode thinking that we're super anti-CrossFit. Hopefully people walk away from this episode thinking Drew and Alex really like to talk to themselves for a really long time because that's what we've been doing. But no, I think CrossFit's a good thing. Like I mentioned, I think sort of intentionally in a controversial way, the point that I was trying to make is that in a lot of ways, it is one of the biggest things that has happened to the fitness industry in a long time, maybe ever. I mean, you could think about sort of the advent of running and just sort of casual jogging, like that had a huge impact on the
Nike.
on the fitness industry. But CrossFit to me, as controversial as it is, and as much as it honestly probably hurts itself with some of the things it puts out, I think that you'd be hard pressed to find something in recent memory in the fitness industry that has had as big of an impact as CrossFit has had. So that would be my take.
I also think they've, and you mentioned this earlier in the episode. They have pushed the boundaries of what is possible in
Oh,
fitness.
I think they're still pushing the boundaries.
Yeah, pretty far. And it's cool to
Yeah.
see.
I think, it's one of those things like there's kind of two ways to learn how to work with athletes. One, you could read a bunch of research, or two, you could like do things like watch the CrossFit games and kind of steal some of those guys' programming. And the research avenue would tell you it's impossible to snatch 300 pounds and run a sub 5 minute mile. And then you could watch Chandler, friend of the show, snatch 300 pounds and run a sub 5 minute mile. So,
Do you think, and this is something we kind of touched on with Chandler when he was on the pod, do CrossFit athletes, the ones who compete at the games and are supposedly the pinnacle of human performance and the fittest on earth and all that stuff, do they follow the stuff that CrossFit preaches to achieve that performance?
Not the level one stuff, no. I don't know
no,
what the level
not.
four stuff is, but yeah.
I mean,
no.
I don't know the secrets. I haven't taken the test where you hold the things and it tells you your levels of midichlorians and then you go into the back room. And, I don't know.
I will say that, you know, we've had Evan on a couple of times and we've talked about sort of the nitric oxide and the moxies and the oxygen and all that stuff. And Evan will tell you that Chandler Smith is the fittest person he's ever tested on that mm-hmm. stuff. So
he's a beast.
Yeah. And not to drag this out any longer and talk about the CrossFit Games a ton, but I will say that, you know, if you look at how that event started versus where it's at now, I think originally it was a lot of the level one madness, just short, high intensity, blah, yeah. blah, 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 blah. Now, I mean, there's a strong case to be made that they are some of the fittest in the world, because you do have typically on the front end of that week, you do have a pretty long endurance event and they're doing legit stuff on those things now.
I think if CrossFit can make it more, this is where we're getting into like the business of sport stuff. It's getting away from actual fitness. But I think if CrossFit can continue to expand how many people can actually be professional CrossFit athletes, like sustain a standard of living by being athletes in their sport, and start to attract people from the sports that pay way, way more money. Like if you got people getting into CrossFit that have the genetics of NFL football players, I think you could see some really, really crazy stuff.
Yeah, but they'll learn that there's no, I think that's a dead end to me. Like if I'm the CEO of CrossFit, I don't give a shit, sorry, about the CrossFit Games. I mean, it's a moneymaker, sure. But like if the whole intent of CrossFit is to create healthy human beings, like I wish you would see CrossFit like link up more with like active.com type stuff, Training Peaks type stuff, like endurance.
And I think CrossFit
and
does have that conversation internally. Like it's
probably
like hopefully. Their marketing has shifted away from the games and towards regular people.
Yeah.
And I think that is important. And in terms of like the difference CrossFit makes in the world, it's not the games where that difference is made. It's getting people off their couch and showing them they can do this, even if they're overweight or 80 years old or whatever the thing is. But I think it's hard. I mean, it becomes a battle of advertising.
Well, that's where CrossFit has become, right. And I think CrossFit has become Kleenex in a sense. Like it's gone from capital C to lowercase c, which is fine. Because now, I mean, you almost can't, if you're CrossFit, early on, CrossFit would try to, we mentioned at the top, like XFit and all these different offshoots that CrossFit would try to go after and sue and whatever. Like, I just don't think that, I think the idea of CrossFit lowercase c has perpetuated the space to such an extent that you do often now see a lot of gyms opening up that don't even affiliate with CrossFit. Like, mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense to them to pay whatever it is a year. I don't know what it is now, $10,000.
None of the magic is proprietary.
Yeah, yeah, it doesn't make sense. So you can now get away with having a gym that's called whatever, Drew and Alex's House of Pain. And we do Metcons, we have horse stall mats on the floor, there's a climbing rope, there's barbells, bumper plates, whatever. And there's enough, like it's, like I said, it's saturated the market enough to where I think that could be a sustainable thing. And there's still people that affiliate, which is fine, good for you. But like,
Less than there used to be, though.
Yeah, I just don't know. But at the same time, I don't know if CrossFit really needs that as much as they used to. I don't know. So, yeah. Who knows? More to follow.
Cool.
Thanks for tuning in to another week. Drew and Alex.
Hey, Alex. Let's cover our ass real quick.
Oh, great idea, Drew. All right, guys. The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entities they represent.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode. Before you go, please rate and review the pod on the listening platform of your choice. You can also visit us on our website at www.mopsinmos.com. That's mops, the letter N, mos.com. You can check out the library of podcast episodes, our latest blog entries, any helpful resources, and also sign up for our newsletter.
Drew nailed it. Just to underline a couple of things, the podcast entries have in-depth show notes on the website. So if you missed anything or you want to read any of the research we talk about, it is all there. You can, at the bottom of the website, sign up with your email and receive future updates from us. The blog posts go a little bit more in depth in kind of written form on a couple of topics we get questions about all the time. But most importantly, I just want to ask all you guys, Our best way the word gets out is absolutely word of mouth. So tell your friends, tell the people you work with, anybody you think would find it useful. Thanks for spreading the word.
If you have any questions or comments, feel free to shoot us an email at either Drew or Alex at mopsandmos.com.
Or there's a contact form on the website.